This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
We have a special bonus episode for you today, folks. We have an interview with my friend, my best friend, my boss, but she hates when I call her that. We have an interview with Lauren Bowser.
Hi, everyone.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So like Ashley said, I'm best friend's best friend, and Ashley is the office manager where I co-own and operate Cusick Funeral Home as a mortuary practitioner for New Jersey, and I also own and operate State Mortuary Service, which is a mortuary trade company out of Randolph.
You're a badass bitch doing badass things.
So thanks for helping me.
Don't forget to include that in your self-description.
Ashley left me a note by my desk to remind me, amongst other things, that I'm a badass.
Yes. I love that you kept it there.
Okay. It makes me feel special.
I need it. So we brought Lauren in today to talk with us about the entire ethical situation behind Hugh Hefner getting the crypt next to Marilyn. And also we're going to throw at you the dude who is above her who's face down, because that's weird AF.
Oh, well, we'd love to get into that. So where I stand on ethics is I feel ethics are essentially right versus right. Morals, or we're going to say, is right and wrong. So I want to preface that what I say in an ethical stance maybe doesn't align with what my moral stance is.
Yeah.
But that's because of my own personal opinion on things. I am trained by George Kelder, who is the CEO of Thenexus and part of our co-op with the New Jersey State Funeral Directors Association. For the last 14 years, I've been taking ethics courses and nationally, locally, have been able to come up with and advise through scenarios of ethics when it comes to mortuary science and mortuary laws, rules, and regulations as well.
And you've been quoted in textbooks, right?
Yes. That's the science side of this. Not the ethics side.
Not
the funeral director side, but the embalmer side.
You should be, though.
Thank you.
So fucking cool.
Katie, I think I'm just going to let you take it away because you're the one who did all of the Marilyn research and you have all of the questions.
I have a lot of questions.
I'm so here for it. I'm glad that I don't have to lead.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, I guess my first question is just the ethics of auctioning off a crypt next to someone. This feels illegal. I mean, I know someone has to be buried there, but it feels fucked up to be like auctioning off someone's resting place.
Well, you have to recognize it in the legal sense that it is not considered just a resting place. It's their deeded property. Put it in the same context legally as you would a condo. Mm-hmm. So I explain that burial plots are like when you buy a house. You own the land. What you do on that land is going to be regulated, let's say, by a homeowners association, which is going to be the people who own the cemetery. When you talk about a mausoleum, it's like you're purchasing a condo. You don't own the land. You own the space that you occupy. So auctioning off the space that you were intended to occupy, whether you're in it or not, is like the ethics behind auctioning off a condo because you live next to Marilyn Monroe, let's say.
Yeah.
Ethics behind auctioning that off, it is what it is. Morals behind auctioning that off and what is right and wrong. This is someone who wanted to obviously gain monetary compensation for what they had, and maybe that changed their life. I'm not here to judge that person.
Yeah.
That's a way more fair response than I was willing to give that person, because I feel so yucky about it, especially because it went to Hugh Hefner.
Yeah.
Having that person be buried next to her after what he did while living is very frustrating.
It does feel like some kind of violation of her.
And again, like in a condo, you can't choose who's going to move in next door to you.
Yeah.
So it's not like in life she had a restraining order against him.
Yeah.
Although she probably had feelings against him based on what he had done with her image. Mm-hmm. Hugh Hefner is quoted as saying, "I know my place in history." And this was an interview that was conducted after the crypt was sold to him in 2017. I know my place in history. So as much as he utilized her as a catalyst in his own career, he utilized her death as a catalyst in his own immortal celebrity. Because what he did was took an icon, someone whose identity was immortalized, and rode on the coattails of it in life and now in death.
It makes me dislike him even more. I mean, I get why you did, but
yeah,
the way that you put that was incredible.
It really was. And it definitely leads me to the just because it's legal doesn't make it right.
Right.
Like morally correct, like you were saying. I don't know if you can answer these questions, but all of this funeral stuff was set up by her second husband, Joe DiMaggio.
Correct.
Which is how she ended up in the crypt. I couldn't figure out if that was just because that was like he had purchased that and it just made sense.
So when it comes to Marilyn Monroe's funeral and her right of control, is she had an executor who at the time is considered an interested party. Because like Ashley knows, the law is it goes and closest to blood relation and without family to step in, take control, your executor becomes your interested party. Her executor was a friend of hers who knew the relationship with Joe DiMaggio and knew her wishes and honestly did right by her because he became the person to make the purchase and joined that interested party in creating this event. It's just this event has permanence. And the funeral home and Hollywood Cemetery, Hollywood Forever, are one in the same as a mortuary and an operation. So I'm sure they're going to work with their clients through and through.
Yeah. Try to keep it in-house.
Keep it in-house.
Yeah.
Yes.
I find it interesting that, like, legally, as you said, it was a friend who knew the relationship. Arthur Miller, just because he was, like, the more recent husband, wouldn't have been able to have any say based on that fact alone.
Were they still legally married?
No, they were divorced.
Yeah, so once you're divorced, that person has no right of control.
Okay, so it was the friend who passed it off to Joe because she knew that he would handle it.
Or they worked together. If someone came in to us and said, my sister bought the crypt for mom, it's his deeded property. Who occupies that property is up to the person who owns it. Ashley's met my aunt. My aunt was the one who is now the owner of the deeded property that my grandmother is in. Because as a decedent, you don't have an asset, you don't own, can't own the condo.
Yeah.
But you can occupy it.
When it comes to auctioning off that crypt space, is that something that is normal or happens often?
No.
Can you tell us about that?
I would say, again, private sale of crypt space. If you were to purchase a crypt and you want to sell it back to the cemetery, you can only get the cost of what you paid for it. Because this person had this property for a period of time and knew the value of the location, he actually sold it for something, you know, more than it's worth and turned a profit. He flipped his house.
That is,
you know,
that's insane.
But it's not common. So now if people have extra spaces, rather than selling it back to the cemetery, and generally at the beginning of my career, it was a little more common for ads in the paper and or ads in the church bulletin of people who maybe moved out of where they had originally purchased space, because the generation, our grandparents' generation and the one that follows, just assuming that we're all around the same age, I'm going to be 37.
We're all in our 30s.
Okay, so in our 30s. Your grandparents' generation and the ones that followed would purchase that deeded property at the time of their family's passing.
Okay.
So when my grandmother's parents passed away and they purchased plots, you would purchase plots for yourself. Helen's family is a great example. Her grandparents have plots, and there's plots for their kids and their spouses. My grandmother's plot, or the plot that my, I think it was my grandfather's side of the family, has like 13 spaces in it.
Oh my gosh.
Because they said, okay, I have six kids and those six kids have spouses.
Yeah.
So all of that was a family thing. Neo-localism has now happened because of our ability to travel, because there's an advancement in transportation.
Yeah.
It doesn't take as long to get places. We're able to move further distances and still be close, air quotes, to our family because an hour drive isn't so bad.
Yeah.
So, and we have the money to travel. Back then it was a different story. So neo-localism has called for this resale of graves. Or not. Or people have them and they stay empty. That's why it's important. We were talking, there's a cemetery locally that is old, Immaculate Conception Cemetery, mm-hmm. and new administration has come in and they have to probe because of the records being so old, family plots being so old, that somebody could be home in a plot that was sold
in a
time where they were doing sales on a Rolodex card. You know, and here's this Rolodex card for you, and that's your deed to the cemetery. So the fact that it's your deeded space and auctioning it off, this guy took the opportunity to profit on what he owned. The ethics behind that are he didn't make a wrong decision. He didn't do anything morally wrong. He didn't take the space and turn it into an anti-Marilyn Monroe campaign. He just turned profit on it.
Yeah.
Wow. That do you wild. Know if it was Joe who auctioned it or if he sold it back to the funeral home and they did it?
Meaning Marilyn Monroe's them. Space?
The spot next to her.
The spot was originally purchased by the guy who auctioned it off. Joe DiMaggio never owned that space.
Oh, for some reason I had thought that Joe had acquired two spots. No.
If he were to purchase, those crypts are not true companion crypts. True companion crypts side by side are one piece of marble. So she's not in a true companion crypt. If that's a double depth crypt, which it might be because if you see the two names, you could have two names on the front of the stone, then they would go in head to head. So if he had intention of going there, that option might always have been. But the space next to her, which I don't think is not a double wide true companion crypt, was originally purchased by the person who sold it and auctioned it off.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay, that definitely changes it. I don't know where I read that Joe had acquired two spots while they were married, and then when they split, got rid of the second spot. So I need to find that
and from my end, it was sold by original purchaser, owned the original deed in his name. Otherwise, he would have owned a transfer deed transferred from Joe DiMaggio. That would probably have driven up the cost of the crypt, is because you would have a certified certificate with Joe DiMaggio's name on it. And signature that was transferred to you. So,
jeez.
I'm sure the baseball world would have been all over that.
Oh my gosh, yes. Too. When you talked about ICC needing to like probe, imagine if they didn't. Yes. And you just opened up and somebody was already
how
there.
They knew they needed to prove.
Oh my God.
Is because that instance did happen.
Wow. That's crazy.
I have recently spoken to the family who that situation happened to them.
Yeah. Oh,
and in
order
to put their loved one near their other loved one, that person's actually buried in the aisle of the cemetery.
Wow.
So that they could be head to head because companion is head to head.
Yeah. I also appreciate them not putting people head to foot.
Head to foot.
That's really nice. Head to head is nice.
Head to head.
Wow.
So probing is important now. And just the fact that they had to do both.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's wild.
Wow.
So when it comes to the crypt next to her, he took advantage of the space, however he acquired it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he knew that there was a certain market of people who were going to purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Hugh Hefner wanted to have continuity in his career and life and death, and again, seized an opportunity that was presented to him.
Yeah.
But who brokered that deal? And where was it advertised?
Right.
That's been very hush-hush. Industry people who I know. And people even through the cemetery have no indication or record as to how that connection was made.
I've always wondered that because, like,
really?
Do you put an ad for that in the newspaper?
This was 2017. This wasn't a time pre-electronics, pre-email, pre-paper trail. How was this deal brokered? Or it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
Everything made it seem like it was a very public auction. I didn't even think to look into how it happened.
I have had a really hard time seeing how it happened. How? I've done as much research as humanly possible, so I think that's something for you guys to dive into.
Yeah.
How was this deal brokered? How did this go up for auction? And was it transferred to?
That's great. And especially like the connections that you have. You know people out in California in the industry.
Yep.
Like that's wow.
Just asking and for everyone to be like, you know what? Dead end on that.
Wow.
Dead end. Don't know.
Whoa.
Interesting.
Is this a conspiracy?
Very California lacks of, well, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
And they probably had a guy who got a guy.
It's Hollywood. Wow.
And so this is a very Hollywood deal, I would say.
That's wild.
Interesting.
I don't love that we can't figure out how that happened, but I kind of love this little story.
Yeah, it opens up a can of worms.
I have a new Marilyn rabbit hole,
yes.
Because I've been really sad to be done researching about her life.
When this was very vague and really hard for me to navigate as to where did this come from, how did it transpire, I recognized that somebody probably made a pretty penny on it.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
When you referred to it as flipping a house too, I lost it. Oh my God, it's so true.
So true. You bought a condo and then all of a sudden Marilyn Monroe moved in next door. You're like, what?
He's looking at this as an investment.
Which it was.
Okay, so the Los Angeles Times said that he paid $75,000.
Not uncommon. So I would say that normal mausoleum space, let's say Holy Cross, North Arlington, New Jersey, one of the nicest cemeteries in the nation, has a view of New York City, is multi-level. Oh,
okay, I know which one.
Multi-level and really developed, beautiful. You would buy a mausoleum space there for probably about 30.
Wow.
So when you think about property cost coast to coast and in LA, the house in New Jersey and the house in LA, gonna cost different. I felt it was really fair market value.
Yeah.
And he probably initially paid drastically less for it. Mm. It's not a prime mausoleum space. Yeah. I think it is outdoor, correct?
Is it? I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah, we saw some pictures. It is outdoor. So yeah.
It's less money when you're outside.
Oh, okay.
More money inside. More money at eye and heart level. Mm. More money if there's a bench there. You know, just like any property, anything around it that makes it easier or has ease for people who are visiting, make it more expensive space.
Nice.
I will say a majority of things are outdoors in Southern California. I grew up there. You know, we didn't have like indoor cafeterias, okay, yeah, or like everything.
My cousin's high school is outside.
Stuff, like everything's outside.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like it's an outdoor courtyard, yeah, thing. But I'm sure that if you could have the privatized space, you would, right? Private mausoleums you can build.
Yeah.
Concrete condos, I call them.
That's more what I'm kind of shocked about, is that given the amount of money that Marilyn had and everything, like that she wasn't given a more private area. I'm surprised by the choice.
Probably because it was one public figure to another public figure keeping it like that, keeping where you are accessible to the public. I do agree. It's not more personalized. There's no special inscription. There's no effigy. It's just her name.
Yeah.
Not even her birth name.
I know.
Yeah. Not even her birth name. I not even just like a private spot where people can't go, but like maybe even a spot where it's like just for her, where more people can go,
yeah,
and lay more, yeah, flowers for her and sit at a bench, like a real memorial spot, is something that I would kind of expect for someone so beloved at that point. That's, I mean, I'm not saying I do believe they did right by her, but like, that's what I would have,
yeah,
done.
But also you left it up to people who, you know, maybe didn't grasp that concept, or in that time couldn't grasp that concept, were younger, knew they had the rest of their lives ahead of them, knew that her estate was going to be a process. I think ethically they did right. Not putting her legal name on the front of the crypt, ethically, I feel like if on her death certificate, her name was her birth name, that's the name that should have been on the headstone with Marilyn Monroe underneath.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
because they can easily do that.
You can easily do it. And what are the laws, rules, and regulations to have essentially a mismarked crypt front?
Mm-hmm.
Like if someone we bury and her name is Maria, but she went by Cookie her whole life, they're not going to put Cookie on there. They're going to put Mary in quotes Cookie in their last name.
Yeah.
So the fact that that wasn't done from an ethical standpoint, I think, is weird.
Yeah.
I don't think that that was, you know, but right versus right. Is it an unmarked thing? No, it's marked.
Yeah.
It's marked by a name she's well known by, but it's, mm-hmm, a right versus right. What is the right way to do it?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I didn't either. It especially adds more depth to the way she really separated Marilyn Monroe and Norma Jean in her life. Having it be marked as just Marilyn,
yeah,
in death is,
now was that a hard decision? Has she ever spoke about her wishes? I've never read anything that said she spoke of what she wanted.
Didn't,
when she,
which
died,
is actually really interesting considering how often she thought about wanting to die and the amount of times she spent in suicidal ideation. To not have that laid out is definitely really interesting. But reading her memoirs and things like that, she referred to herself as Marilyn and Norma Jean as if it was separate from her.
meaning separate from her, as in one and the same, or did she evolve from Marilyn into Norma Jean, or does she refer to Marilyn as a past tense of herself? How would she want her death identity?
That I'm not sure about, because she even, like, there was a time where she talked about, like, how she would take long baths and sort of disassociate, and how she then realized that it wasn't Marilyn who wanted to take long baths, but Norma Jean. And just, like, interesting ways where it was like, Norma Jean is afraid of this, but Marilyn Monroe is not.
So they're all how she presents herself, mm-hmm. and her own two spirits, let's say, multiple personalities that she needed to emulate for success, for survival, for all these things. So again, not a judgment on her in her ability to cope,
yeah.
and cope with what she was presented with. But in death, what do you do by someone? If she was the embodiment of both, she should be represented.
Absolutely. And it's interesting when you think about how she would talk about the people in her life who knew her. Very few people in her star life, she would say, knew Norma Jean. It was really just a couple people. So then to have that identity be fully dropped by those people who she didn't let know Norma Jean is, I'm going to be really sad for the rest of the day, I think.
Okay. This was going to be a sad episode. So, great funeral historian Todd Van Beck teaches a lot of seminars, and there's something that he said that resonated with me. He said, you can have a 99-year-old man on that table, but that was somebody's baby, you know, and you go back to where we came from, and when death is the great equalizer, it doesn't matter how much money you have, it doesn't matter anything. Your corpse and the reverence to that corpse and what you do to dignify and essentially ethically dispose of the corpse is up to the living. And that's where we are the intermediary of as morticians. So recognizing that her at leaving this world, that's somebody's baby. Yeah, and that baby absolutely. Was
I love having those kinds of conversations with you in the office, because we talk about the fact that you could not agree with someone politically, but when you're in this position, you are taking care of that person because they deserve that as a basic human right.
We've put people in their MAGA hats.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry you have a lesbian putting you in your MAGA hat, but I'm okay with it because I took care of you just like I would anybody else, whether it was a Pride hat, MAGA hat, Star Wars hat, whatever you got going on. I'm here for your self-expression in death, and I'm just your agent for that.
Yeah.
So I try and separate myself, but in that separation and where I stand as to what we do in a call of service, a funeral service professional can be intimidated by having strong clients. When you have a client who's famous, whether they feel that they're famous locally or in their own right, or they're famous actually internationally known, you have to treat them with the same humility and not get intimidated by their status, mm-hmm. and recognize as much as you are you're a famous baseball player, Joe DiMaggio, famous baseball player, very important to American culture. At the end of the day, you're her grieving spouse. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you were someone who knew her intimately and it played a part of your life. So I'm here to treat you like that person, and you shouldn't be treated any more or any less.
Yeah.
We run the funeral the same way, whether you have 4 people on the funeral or 400 people on the funeral.
You're truly, that's a beautiful way of looking at it.
Not me fangirling over here.
Ashley, you're part of it.
And it feels so good. And I fucking love being in this environment. It's a great place to be. And I'm glad I'm part of somebody who's trying to break the mold.
Yeah, I really want to break the mold. You know, and I have to say, in breaking the mold, I came from a pretty good mold. I have people who are my constituents and my colleagues who are a good mold. And all I can do is advocate to mold other professionals or people who might not fall or recognize in the mindset, but coming from the New Jersey State Funeral Directors Association, coming from George Kelder, everybody who sits in that class with me knows and should have the same ethical standard.
Yeah.
And what we do is we're navigating right versus right decisions. And this is just a unique scenario where those right versus right decisions. So as much as you get into Hugh Hefner's desire to capitalize on Marilyn Monroe's image, the ethics behind that is if he did it legally, and he did everything within the confines of the law without breaking them, then he maintained his ethical stance. Mm-hmm. What our moral values are on someone monetizing on someone else's work without their consent, without compensating them, whether he did it legally or not, might not be the most moral choice. choosing to capitalize on her resting place, choosing to capitalize on these things might not be morally sound, but ethically, he did it legally, as far as we know. He did it legally and did it to secure and advance himself, even in death.
You just summed that up so nicely. Katie, do you have any more questions?
In the last episode, there were quite a few people who testified and said that someone stabbed her. Is that the right term? Someone injected something into her heart, whether it was adrenaline or another drug. That's not what I'm necessarily asking. But then the people in the autopsy said they didn't see any injection spots on her. To inject something into the heart, it has to be a pretty, like, legit needle.
So you go through the third intercostal space. You would have to be, like, kind of trained to know where the heart is. So anybody who did administer something to her heart probably would have been a medical professional.
EMTs and a doctor is who did it, allegedly.
Yeah, so then they would probably know, but it would show up on the autopsy report as a mark on the skin and in her heart.
And none of that was listed on the autopsy, so I was just curious about how visible that injection site would be versus if someone was using some sort of drug to be injected. I feel like those needles are much smaller and hard to detect.
The gauge of the needle, I don't think would affect it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but it would have a mark on the skin post-mortem from an injection site. You would have some discoloration around that area.
For any size.
That's interesting.
Any sign. If I have someone who's an overdose case, intravenous drug use, it's apparent in their injection site. And sometimes you see that injection site is on their feet or their hands or their wrist. Yeah. So even sensitive areas like that, you'd be able to see it.
Yeah. Because they are trying to say that they tried to bring her back after realizing that she had died with using some kind of adrenaline.
They either said it was adrenaline or it could have been the drug that she actually overdosed on, whether you believe she was murdered by a communist conspiracy.
It's interesting that they're saying that that happened, that they did that, but then that wasn't found in her autopsy.
Right.
Yeah.
I would say based on if her postmortem photos are genuine and true, I would say that she was probably deceased for a few hours due to the postmortem lividity and stain on her face.
Yeah.
She was probably on the dependent side of her face. Gravity then pulled that blood into her capillaries. I don't think any medical professional would attempt to revive someone who's clearly deceased.
The claims were that happened at 10:30 the night prior, and that people were trying to extend the timeline of her death so that someone could be blamed or not be blamed. I was just curious about the needle mark because everyone was like, needle marks are usually very elusive. And I was like, are they though? That doesn't seem real from what I know.
Yeah. And
especially to an area such as that.
Yeah. Third intercostal space, it would have to be the third rib up here.
Mm. So kind of like under. So yeah, for people, because people can't see us.
Oh, right.
For the people listening at home, it would be under the breast.
Yeah.
Under the breast.
Like near next to the sternum or underneath.
Which side?
So at the bottom of your left hand side, the bottom of your sternum is called your xiphoid process, little thing that sticks out. From there is your first rib. The intercostal space is the space between the rib. Mm. The third intercostal space is where your heart is located.
Oh.
So a medical professional would be able to see that. And it's not like she was so busty that they wouldn't see it. And especially if she was laying down.
I need to look up photos. That might be where her giant scar is, Ash.
So it would be a bit above that scar.
Where does
her gallbladder?
Okay. I was like, did we just solve this conspiracy? Okay.
Other side.
Because that would be insane if then it was like they actually injected her through the scar and no one noticed. That, I mean, guys, we would be millionaires if that.
Always the last to know, and Lauren Bowser solve it.
I feel like I had another autopsy question, but I can't think of it. I think it was just related to the organ samples that went missing.
I mean, honestly, not uncommon. We had a case that just happened to. not uncommon. It's basically just a sliver of the organ enough to go on a slide and be assessed and sampled for its chemical construct. So once the report is done, they're kind of useless. They save them sometimes, UND and J, before they were taken over, I think, by Rutgers. When you would go sign out a body, there was a whole room, and in Tupperware were, like, brain samples.
Oh, my
and
God.
I remember, like, one of my first times there, I'm, like, 19, and I walked in, and I thought of just the movie Frankenstein, where he's like, you know, brain Abby, yes. Abby normal. I was like, this is that section, but not uncommon for them to go missing, but they didn't have much value. You know, there's only so long that these things are good for, that their organic chemical makeup is good for.
How often do they go missing before the report is done?
I'm not sure. Well, we're in the state of New Jersey, so, you know, reports are a year out. And then by the time the report comes back, if it's inconclusive, and then they go back to say, okay, well, we'll do genetic markers. Oops, we lost the sample.
Okay, because the way that it was presented in the research that I saw from just, like, public person end was that he sent in the samples, but when he got the report back, there was nothing on those samples because they went missing before testing.
And this probably was a name situation where maybe it was her birth name on there and the person who's processing them, like, passe, didn't really do what they needed to do, not knowing the case because of how many hands these things go through, how many different professionals need to handle it. So, or they decided that they didn't want anyone to know, and this is not a what you know who you know situation, so you can only speculate as to why this happened.
Yeah,
but is it common? Is it frequent? Is it normal?
Okay, absolutely. That's really what I was looking for, because conspiracy theorists love to be like, Ralph Greenson worked for UCLA. And sometimes I'm one of those conspiracy theorists. It's an awesome story. I was just curious,
yep,
like, how many hands does that touch? And I love that you brought up her birth name, because that's actually a really excellent point, that someone saw Norma Jean M and was like, what? This doesn't match up with the case. This doesn't, who cares? The 60s, it's not like we have barcodes and things.
This guy's on LSD and, like, not worried.
Yeah, so that's actually a really good point that I wish I brought up in the episode, but now we have this one. But a lot of people love to present it as, like, and this went missing, and that's absolutely crazy. But the more I look into it, I feel like that's actually a lot more common than people like to think. And it's a lot more like, hey, it's really cool to tell this story about all of this stuff. But also, like, sometimes police officers who investigate things are just also incompetent. And maybe they put a glass at the crime scene because that's just easier for them. Like, a lot of times people take all of these cops' words at heart, and it's a little bit like, hey, Katie, don't forget your ACAB also. And maybe cops in the 60s weren't super trustworthy.
It's more because there wasn't the bureaucracy or technology to support ethical processing or fair and just service at that time.
Yeah.
So that's why evolving socially and with technology and making sure that things are done right. It's not like, again, they had barcodes. It's not like money didn't talk, cash didn't talk.
Mm.
So recognizing that absolutely could be a probable situation, especially in the time. If that was today, it would be all over the place. It would be a text message, a cash app, something, and people would get popped. Back then, it was two guys in an alley with no security cameras. The only thing I say and has come to be true is, only two people can keep a secret, and that has to be if one of them is dead. Mm-hmm. So if Hugh Hefner had a secret about that crypt, that secret is going to get
kept. That's one of the best, arguments in general against a lot of the conspiracy theories that we see now, because people love to be like, and all of these people were in on it. The JFK assassination, for example, a lot of people love to be like, and these 12 people had a party and planned it. And if we look back in history at the, quote, conspiracy theories that ended up being true, such as MKUltra, it was two people, three people who really knew. It was two people who knew the scope of it. One of them died. And then two people individually who knew what these doctors were doing. It wasn't some big organization, because people can't keep secrets.
No, even especially because everybody likes to socially drink, socially use illicit drugs, and especially people with money who have access to these types of things are going to talk. It's a power play, and it makes them feel more powerful. If you were evil enough to do this, mm-hmm. you know, then you're evil enough to boast about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the conspiracy on that, I think the death of celebrities in general that are posed or that you were like, iffy on could absolutely have been orchestrated, could have been a higher political stance. But if we say it's Marilyn Monroe, JFK, then they're all down the line. Mm-hmm. Then they all got popped. You know, they're all part of that. So why would the JFK, why would the Kennedys want to do it to Marilyn when they were the ones themselves a target?
Yeah, I will say I do mm-hmm. personally think that Bobby may have had a hand in it. I think he like gave her something to calm her down while looking for the diary. And then it was like, oh, shit, I forgot that she does a lot of drugs and she accidentally overdosed.
Right. And again, probable.
Yeah.
Totally probable. Not a people got and they planned and they wanted her because of this, but that her death like was.
Sometimes terrible things accidentally happen.
Yeah. Somebody who is really, I feel, could be an expert on putting the kibosh on conspiracy theories, and I've talked with Ashley about it, is Dr. Michael Bodden, the former New York City chief medical examiner. And he is no nonsense when it comes to these things, and especially as someone who's examined the JFK case and report and has been an expert on so many things. I've been fortunate enough to speak to him in person, and he I love his stance of it's black or white. Yeah. It is or it isn't. And if you give me a gray area, I can only give you a gray area response.
I know Katie really likes Dr.
Did you guys
Bodden.
Ever talk about JFK? What did he say about that?
I attended his seminar on his case to the Supreme Court. And in the middle, and a couple of his other cases, his seminar essentially could change my life. I loved it. He can only give a gray answer on JFK because they didn't give him JFK's corpse. You gave me everything but the body. And without, that's a body of evidence. And mm-hmm. he holds to that so true. Without that body being in his possession for examination, he can't conclude without a reasonable doubt. Although he has personal opinions on it, his personal opinions don't reflect as to what ethically you present yourself as a professional.
Yeah.
As a professional, he can't say. He can only say it's gray. It would be unethical for him to say it was black or white.
That makes perfect sense. What are your personal opinions on JFK?
Based on conversations with Dr. Michael Bodden, based on research, is that it's the trajectory of the bullets, period. It's entrance and exit wounds, period. And to say that it came from multiple sources is what I can say I firmly feel comfortable saying. Who are those sources? How did they get there? How did it go down? Also, his body. Everybody's claimed he's embalmed on the plane. I don't like that. Ashley's seen the embalming.
No, I hate to that.
To do it on a plane, especially in that time period.
Process.
That's messy.
And it's, I don't feel. Could he have been recasketed on the plane? Plausibly. Yeah. My understanding is the container that went onto the plane was different than the container that came off of the plane. But Ashley has seen combo units. Combo units are something that holds the casket and the person.
Oh, no,
that's an air tray holds the casket and the person. But did he go in a combo unit and the casket was on the plane and they took him out of the smaller box to put him in the casket that was already there? Did he go on in a casket? It didn't seem like it looked small, but he did come off in a casket.
Yeah.
So I felt like maybe he was casketed on the plane, but I felt like he would have needed to have been prepared prior to that. His chemical, he needed to be prepared. He needed to be embalmed before he got on the plane.
Yeah.
His autopsy photos are also inconsistent with scene photos. Mm. And seeing that in Dr. Bodden's seminar is why Dr. Bodden wanted to see the body and probably why they didn't let him.
Yeah. Hoo-hoo. I didn't even think about like the actual act of embalming on a plane.
No way.
Like that's like Katie someday will show you the embalming room, but like no,
there's the people who take it even further and say that the body of the police officer who was shot was, because he kind of looked like JFK, was brought onto the airplane and surgically altered to look more like JFK and like he was shot from the schoolhouse depository, which makes no sense because he was shot like at point blank range by Oswald. Yeah, so. People love to talk about JFK's body being surgically messed with on the airplane. And I'm just like, have you ever been on a fucking airplane? No.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to happen. It's not plausible.
Reconstruction is something that takes a lot of time and effort, but it would need to be prepared tissue to do that. They would have to be embalmed. So I think what's
That's crazy.
Interesting is people who don't understand our end of it, you know, coming through. But understanding merchandising, I can kind of understand the whole switching on the plane thing. I get it. You know, they're like, listen, caskets on the plane, we'll casket them, we'll dress them, we'll make sure. Totally doable on a plane. Private, controlled, doable. I would feel comfortable doing that.
But embalming?
Embalming, he was embalmed before he got on the
plane. Yeah, yeah.
There's no way.
No way that that happened on the plane.
No, that seems like such a risky process.
Yeah, and gross, honestly.
Yeah, it's messy.
That is all of the questions. You answered a lot of them in just your answers.
Well, if you think of more, I have a lot of different topics that I'm knowledgeable on when it comes to postmortem things. If you have any of Dr. Bodden's cases that you ever want to talk about, I would love that.
I will.
It's going to be his 90th birthday soon, and I'm going to invite him to dinner.
Oh my gosh!
So I'm hoping that he accepts my invitation, but I've kept in touch with his team, and they're awesome.
That's amazing. So that's a baller ass move, Lauren.
And you want to know what? I would never ask him about career stuff unless he brought it up.
Yeah.
I would want to just go. He hit on my mom before, which was pretty cool.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
So I'd bring my mom.
Oh my god. I love that. I love that for your mom.
I love that for her too.
Yeah.
I love that for her too. He gave her ice cream. It was cute.
Aww.
Yeah, he said she was beautiful, and he said I was beautiful because I looked like her.
Oh, yes.
It was great to meet you. Thank you so much for answering my questions. I'm sure that I will
have
you.
Ashley, thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for agreeing to do this.
Yeah, you're amazing. You can guess. Ashley's a good funeral service administrative professional.
Thank you. That feels good to hear.
I believe it.
We'll see you on Sunday for your regularly programmed episodes. Bye.
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 For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.